Anna here. Now, are you an entrepreneur who wants to write and publish a book about your own failures turned successes? Well, good news, that's what my company, Legacy Launchpad, does. Find out more at LegacyLaunchpadPub.com. That's LegacyLaunchpadPub.com. Now, should you do a book, you ask? I think so. Why? Because you're worth it. Now back to the show. Now, the best books are made up of stories. And let's face it, the best stories are about bouncing back from failure. I'm Anna David, obsessed with books, a New York Times bestselling author, and the CEO of Legacy Launchpad Publishing. And I only achieve those things because I picked myself up again after failing and found my way to success. And that makes me uniquely qualified to get the best stories about failure and success out of other people.
Failure is always a learning experience.
So after 6 months, I told him that I Googled sociopath and he had all of the symptoms and I found myself out of job.
At that time, it was supposed to be a side hustle.
Well, the side hustle started to make far more money than the real hustle. So after six months, I quit my job.
Welcome to Fail Your Way to Success.
Welcome to the podcast that enjoys your success, but knows your failures teach you a lot more. Today's episode talks about success and failure, but also talks about some sensitive subjects, including how my guest's husband killed himself in front of her and her children. So know that going in. And then let me tell you the incredible story. Heidi McNulty had retired at the age of 35, had built up her wealth, mostly through real estate, to over $10 million net worth, when the unthinkable happened. And she realized the true reason it was important to have money. Now she helps young people get financial literacy and information when they're still young. She grew up with her parents living paycheck to paycheck. She doesn't want others to have to worry about money. So that's what she helps people do. That's what she talks about in her new book, Buying Time. And that's what she talks about here. So with that, I give you Heidi McNulty.
Well, Heidi, thank you for being here.
Thank
you for thanking me. You have a very dramatic shift in your trajectory towards where you are right now. Can we just get right into that?
Yeah. So I retired at 35 in April of 2022. And in July of 2022, me and my kids and my husband went to go visit his brother and pack up stuff for his niece to come move to Utah and be my assistant. And on the way back, my husband of 15 and a half years had a PTSD episode and ended up pulling over and shooting himself in front of me and the three boys.
Okay, I didn't realize that that's exactly how it happened. What on earth was going through your mind at that point?
At that point, I was trying to just get us home safely. I had actually bought a house for him down the street so that when he has PTSD episodes, he can go and have kind of like a safe place to go by himself. And so my objective at that point, what happened leading up to that was my husband was definitely having an episode, and I was in the gas station, and my son, who was 13 at the time, came in and was crying. And I was like, "What happened?" He's like, "Dad just hit me and knocked my hat off." And Rick had never really been physical. That wasn't a normal thing for him. So I could tell that he was like really out of sorts. And so when I got back in the car, I was trying to talk to him and I was like, "You know, I get like you're upset, but like you can't hit the kids. Like, I'm not okay with that." And he kind of spiraled out of control. And I was like, "Okay, let's just get home. Like, we can talk about it another time. Let's just get home." And then that's when he pulled over and you know, I think at the time we all felt very guilty, like we shouldn't have brought it up. But I was often in a place of protecting my kids or de-escalating my husband. And I think, you know, I tended and still tend to resort to the side of protecting my children.
Right. And since you are a financial expert, you have the time to really heal.
Yeah. I was very fortunate to have, I feel like there were a lot of silver linings in this. One of them was that I had retired and, you know, I wasn't around any toxic relationships. I had a very safe place in my home to heal. Another silver lining was that Rick's niece was moving here to be my assistant. So in her moving here, like she's literally on her way, moving two states away. And I told her, actually she was going to be living in the upstairs of the house that I had bought for Rick. And so I had to tell her, hey, you know, unfortunately Rick killed himself and you don't have a place to live. Cause now I have to sell this house. And so it was really hard for her, but she ended up living with me for a little bit, and having that help and that support right off the bat was so nice. And just having time to just focus 100% on healing and 100% on my kids' well-being. We spent so much quality time together and, you know, did a lot of things to like honor Dad and honor, you know, his memory, but also, you know, go to counseling and do things, you know, on the clinical side as well.
And so how did this change your who, like what you do and who you help?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. I think the best way I can describe it is before I retired, I was boss bitch Heidi. I was a very intense, intimidating, strong businesswoman. And I definitely would walk into a room and control the energy and control the room. And I've really softened. I don't think that I had any empathy, let alone enough empathy with the person that I was. And now I would say I'm probably one of the most empathetic people you'll meet. I'm able to live in my feminine. I don't have to be this strong, hard shell anymore because, you know, my home life is very peaceful and any business that I do is helping people. So it's also very peaceful and there's no intense relationships or intense situations in my life anymore. So I'm just I'm a much softer, feminine, compassionate person now. And I really feel like this is who I am and this is who I've always been. I just was kind of in survival mode for a long time and survival mode was a lot harder of a shell.
That makes sense too. I will say I met you a couple years ago and I didn't think you were boss. You were very powerful, but you're soft and beautiful and all of these things that maybe I saw through the shell, but I never.
Yeah, I was going to say, you met me at the mastermind and I feel like that was always one of the places where I could be myself and I didn't have to be boss bitch Heidi to get somewhere. Whereas I feel like in most of my other business dealings, I had to be a lot more bossy.
Yeah, that's interesting. So let's talk about your failures on your way to success. Ooh.
So, which one?
Yes, there's plenty. Exactly. What's the first one that comes to mind?
The first one that comes to mind is probably my first flip. I lost $52,000 on my first flip. And at that time I had, I think, four rental properties and felt like, yeah, you know, I really got this down. I should try a flip. And they're not the same. I learned a lot and I had taken education courses before, you know, switching to flips and trying flips. But I just am one of those hard-headed people that has to learn things from experience. And I learned a lot. And I think that, you know, that first one was enough education so that when I did the next one, I made 45 grand on the next one. And I ended up doing 12 profitable flips that year that I got back into it. So I definitely learned a lot. I consider it, you know, a PhD in what not to do, flipping 101.
And what sorts of things did you learn in a general way about, you know, did you move too fast? Did you not check out? What did you learn?
There were a few lessons that I attribute to that experience. The first one is that I didn't know my numbers. I had a wholesaler that sold me the deal, and he gave me numbers on what he thought it would sell for. And I should have gotten three opinions. And that way I had, you know, more feedback and more data to go off of. When you're going off one person, if they're wrong, you're the one that eats it at the end of the day, not them. I also trusted their data as far as purchase price. And now when I do flips or rentals, I always run my own numbers, and I always have a separate realtor pull numbers for me as well to make sure I'm on track. So I learned a lot more about numbers and the data. The second thing I learned was that doing everything yourself is not a good plan. So for example, in our rentals, we had done the painting. My husband was a carpenter for years, so he had done a lot of the carpentry work, things like that. And on my flip, you're purchasing it with hard money and refinance. You're not refinancing it like a rental property. You're trying to sell it for money, and it's going to end up being on the market that costs extra time already. And what I didn't take into account is every day that it took us longer to do things ourselves than it would have to had a team come in and do it in one day, ended up costing a lot more in the long run. And I think that attributes to all business, right? Like if we, you know, if we're trying to do everything ourselves, wearing all the hats, one, we're not going to be as good as someone in their expertise. And two, you might save, you know, a dime, but you tripped on the dime to pick up the penny. And so it's really not a good plan in the long run. I learned to utilize people and their expertise and have a crew for each specific task. And in doing that, we were able to flip houses in 6 weeks instead of 6 months. Wow. So it just really changed the timeline, which then changes the hard money costs and a lot of things involved, and made for a much smoother process.
So what is your why now that you're helping other women as a financial expert? What drives you?
I think the biggest thing is that I just like helping people. I don't feel like I'm an expert in every arena, but I feel like finances is an area that I have done well for myself and taken a lot of courses and different strategies to learn. And I just want to be able to help people learn that information as young as possible. You know, with my book, I always say that the ideal age for my book is probably 15 to 25. And it's not because those principles don't apply to people over 25. It's because past 25, you probably already have a mortgage. You already have bills that are over 50% of your income. And it's a lot harder to downsize your life. It takes a lot more discipline to downsize your life and downsize your house and or move back into a neighborhood that maybe isn't as nice as the one you're in right now to get your finances in order than it is to just start in a small house and work your way up and take baby steps at first.
Yeah, here's a shallow analogy. It's like weight gain. If you just start off with healthy habits, knowing about nutrition, it's a lot harder to lose the weight down the line than just to start off right.
100%. Nutrition and finances go hand in hand. And it's really like I equate our little $5, $10, you know, spending here and there is the same as a bite here or there when you're eating. But the thing that people don't realize is when you sit down and actually count your calories, so many people eat 3,000 or 4,000 calories a day and wonder why they're gaining weight. But it's all those little, you know, 50 calories here, 50 calories there. Finances are no different. When I sit down and do budgets with people, everyone thinks that they spend less than $500 or less on fast food. And I've only seen one person that was less than $1,200 a month. But it's $5 and it doesn't seem like a lot. But then when you consider you're spending $1,200 on fast food, that's a lot of money that you could cut that down to even $500. And that's still a lot of money eating out, and invest $700 a month.
Yeah. So why is it important to you to help younger people? Aside from getting the good habits.
Yeah, I think it's important for me to help younger people because I feel like in society today, we're expecting parents to teach their kids financial literacy, but the parents don't know financial literacy and the schools aren't doing a good enough job of teaching that. And so I'd like to start there so that as those children grow up, they can change the economy, really. Like, there's so many negative things that come from financial stress. It's the number one cause of divorce. You know, divorce rates are through the roof. And if we could even just ease financial stress, how many more people would be presenting the world a better version of themselves because they're not so stressed? And even in their home, you know, these kids will have better home lives because their parents aren't so stressed and lashing out at them over something that's completely out of their control. So my hope is to help this upcoming generation of parents and, you know, homeowners to have better financial literacy and better financial hygiene so that they can have happier, less stressful lives and then change the way, you know, the economy is currently. Like, if you're good with your money, you're not worried about the ups or downs in the economy.
Yep. And why is that important to you?
It's important to me because I grew up, and that was something that my parents always fought about. My parents, they've been married. We're actually going to their 50th wedding anniversary this Saturday. But they always fought about money. Like, that was the only thing they ever fought about was money. And I think it just really affected me as a kid. I really vowed that I would not grow up and have to fight about money. That's such a silly thing to fight for when just a little bit of discipline, you know, can help really resolve most of those issues. And so I just really want to help people so that they can have the best home life possible.
And is it, would you say then your why is to make sure other kids don't have to experience what you did, seeing your parents fight?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's so much bigger than even just seeing them fight. I think, you know, again, like, so many people get divorced over finances. So many people, you know, get abused because they're significant other is financially stressed and, you know, lashing out. And it's just not, it's not necessary. Like, there's steps and there's education that I want available, you know, at an affordable cost to change those situations and change them pretty dramatically in a short period of time.
And so what is it that you offer? What specifically can people hire you for?
So right now I do real estate and finance coaching. I go through your budget with you. For example, I have a couple that I've been working with, and they're actually really doing great and being very disciplined and downsizing their house so that they can invest more and be financially free. And so I kind of help people of various levels. I've helped people that, you know, are just graduating college and have, you know, a small amount of income and very small amount of debt or savings, either direction. And I help you kind of create a game plan of what investments most interest you and how to accomplish that with daily budgeting and things like that so that you can reach your financial goals. And then I usually will tie them also to some mental health practices such as daily gratitude and things like that, so that you know, I feel like even mental health kind of plays into our finances as well. And, you know, there's retail therapy. Well, there's better options that we can do than blow money to help us feel better. And I help my clients go through that as well.
That is brilliant. I don't know of any other financial experts that incorporate mental health, and you're the perfect person to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like it's definitely important, and they are so correlated.
And what is it like to kind of go from behind the scenes investor, flipper, to stepping into sharing your story?
You know, I actually did a post about this a month or so ago as we were getting to this final stage of the book. And it's interesting because, like, I'm not any different than anyone else. And I definitely went through feelings of, like, who am I to write a book? Who am I to do these things? And I just had to remind myself, like, I'm not, you know, claiming to be an expert or the only one that can help you, but my goal is to help people, and I'll help people with the gifts that I have. And, you know, the rest is out of my control. And so if I can give back in any way, then that's really the ultimate goal. But, you know, if I said that I didn't have some feelings of unworthiness or questioning my worth, I'd be lying.
Yeah, I think imposter syndrome it's like, you know, they talk about the stages of grief, the stages of stepping into your greatness. Imposter syndrome is probably two of those steps, because you feel it and you've got to work through it. And what I always say to people is, when they say, well, who am I to do it? And I say, who are you not to?
Yeah.
If you have achieved the kind of success you've achieved, I say you owe it to people to share how you did it.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's something I had to work through. But I definitely agree. I think, you know, if everyone has a story, and there's something to learn from everyone's story. And, you know, just because I'm writing a book doesn't mean that I am claiming to be better than anyone else, or, you know, putting myself up like that. It just means that I'm sharing my story and trying to help the world in any way I can.
And what is it like now that people know, you know, are you meeting people yet who know about you because you've been stepping into your public square?
Yeah, I've been experiencing that mostly with my husband's contacts, like people I've never met. And they're like, oh, I feel like I know you from all your guys' posts. And I think, you know, hopefully it's inspiring, and hopefully it's positive for people. I definitely, you know, want to help be inspiring and help people reach their full potential.
Since you mentioned husband, let's talk about the happy ending to your story.
Yeah. So I met him probably about 7 or 8 months after Rick had passed. And I had been dating a little bit before that. And it just wasn't really going anywhere. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't sweeping me off my feet by any means. And I was working with my mental coach, and he was like, well, what do you want in your future husband? Because I was very sure that I wanted to get remarried. I definitely am a wifey material. I'm not, you know, I don't enjoy dating and like any of that. Or like even like the social scenes where it's like a bunch of single people. It's not my jam. And so I created the list of what I was looking for. And then I got a message randomly on Instagram from a medium on the East Coast that said, I don't know why I'm being drawn to your profile to tell you you need to think outside the box. And I'm like, okay, that has to be about dating. What am I going to think outside the box? And in the dating apps, I'd been only on Bumble, where I have to initiate the conversation and I get to pick who to talk to. And I was looking for 6 foot and up, and, you know, just felt very like just very surface level. And I was like, okay, I'll try Tinder. I wasn't on Tinder on purpose, because I'd always heard Tinder is just like a hookup site. And I'm like, I'm not looking for that, but I'll try it. So I signed up for Tinder, and Rob messaged me like the first day, and we talked, his profile was all about mental health and suicide prevention and teen advocacy. And I was like, I never respond to people when they comment on like, oh, you're beautiful or this or that. And I looked at his profile and saw like what he does. And I was like, oh, okay, I actually do want to respond to this one. And so I responded and we had coordinated a meetup. And then he asked me how old I am, or not how old I am, sorry, how tall I am. And I was like 5'8". And he's like, oh, me too. And I was like, shit. Because I'd never dated a short guy before. And mainly for my own insecurities. Like, I'm 5'8". I'm a pretty tall girl. And I was like, man, I'm going to look like a giant next to him. And I called my friend and I was like, dude, do I just cancel the date? And she's like, no, you're supposed to be thinking outside the box. And I was like, okay. So I went, and on the way there, he was like, meet me in the parking lot. And I don't know if you've seen my husband. He's very tattooed.
Very tattooed.
Very masculine. Could kill anyone. And so I messaged like 4 people and I'm like, okay, I'm meeting this guy in the parking lot to go to eat breakfast. If you don't hear from me in 15 minutes, call the cops. And then I got there and he wanted me to meet him in the parking lot so he could pay for my parking. And I was like, oh, that was so sweet. Like, I'm so he's just very thoughtful. He's very, very masculine, and it lets me stay in my feminine energy so well. And we met that day and we've been together pretty much 24/7 since then.
And okay, so let me ask you this. If you had to give someone advice, let's say they're in the middle of the struggle, think back to when you were grappling with your husband's suicide, as well as grappling with the flip not going well, what do you wish someone had told you?
I've become pretty spiritual since Rick's passing. Like, I pray a lot, and I wouldn't say I'm religious. I don't go to any particular church, or, I feel like my relationship with God is between me and him. And, that can look like whatever it needs to for you. That could be the universe, that could be whatever it needs to be. But I definitely focus on just doing the next right thing. And trusting that God has a plan, and trusting that everything always works out for your betterment. Whether, you know, if you look back at anything in your life, there's always a lesson that you learned. And sometimes we have to go through hard things to learn lessons and evolve as a person so that we can become our best self. So I really, when I'm going through hard times, I really try to focus on like, okay, what is God trying to teach me right now? Like, what is the lesson that I'm supposed to be learning? And I feel like as I focus on the lesson and learn it faster, those hard times get easier and easier, because he doesn't have to keep banging it into your head. Like, yeah. I feel like when I'm hard-headed and fighting it, then, you know, I have to go through it until I learn the lesson. And when I can focus on the lesson, I feel like I tend to learn things faster, and then things turn around in a quicker timeline.
It's so true. Someone I know calls it God's 2x4, where tries to teach you a lesson, you don't listen. Tries to teach you again, you don't listen. And then finally, it's like, you know what? I'm going to give it to you in a way where you can't help but listen.
Yeah.
Then you surrender, and then you learn. Next time, I'm going to learn the first time.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And one other thing. So we know where you are now, successful and love. Where did you start? What did you, you know, you started from zero when you got into real estate, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I started from zero. I mean, my parents always owned their house. Well, paid a mortgage on their house. But growing up, you know, we had a single income household. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and we had 5 kids in California. So, you know, pretty expensive to live there. And we lived in like a nice neighborhood. It wasn't overly nice, but it wasn't ghetto by any means. And I think that just growing up, my mom, you know, she always had crappy cars. We always lived paycheck to paycheck. So when I moved out when I was 17 because I was a little bit rebellious and just wanted to follow my own rules. And my parents were very LDS. And so they wanted me to go to church on Sundays and go to seminary at 6 o'clock in the morning and do all these things that I just didn't really want to do. So it was like, okay, I'm going to pay for myself and move out on my own so that I can make my own rules. So I did. And I had multiple jobs always. I always worked really, really hard. And I worked a lot. I mean, I regularly worked over 100 hours a week, even at 17. And then from there, I got pregnant and moved to Utah so that I could focus on the baby and decided it was time to get a big girl career and kind of grow up so that this baby could have a good life. And I, you know, it wasn't the baby's fault. I got pregnant young. So I was determined to make sure that I gave him a good life.
And where are you now? Can we be tacky and just talk numbers?
Yes. So now I am currently, I wouldn't say retired, but I definitely don't have like a full-time thing. I am getting my net worth probably at my, I've lost a little over the last year with the real estate market, as has everyone in Utah. So my net worth when I retired was 15 million. It's probably down to 12 now. So still doing good. I think, I've definitely, you know, had some setbacks in the last year. I've lost at least $2 million in the last year, and that's been rough, but I've learned so much. This is my first down market in real estate since I started real estate in, 2012. Because I came in as the market was going back up. And so I've only ever experienced a growing market. And this has been a huge learning lesson for me to experience, you know, a down market and how to price houses differently and how to buy houses differently and negotiate different things. So it's been really a great experience for me. And I think even though I've lost some money in the last year, I will come out a much better investor and have a different outlook so that I've learned a lot even about economies and how things are so cyclical and how to watch for those signs so that you can, obviously no one has a crystal ball, but there are definitely cues and data points that I could have paid attention to see things coming.
Fabulous. So if people want to find out more about you, reach you, where should they go? What's the best place?
So I'm on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, all just at Heidi McNulty. And then I have my website. It's HeidiMcNulty.co. And that has links to my different ventures. We're launching an app right now that's a genealogy / social media app. It's got probably my main passion project right now, which is the Village Effect. And that's the youth, mentoring, suicide prevention, things like that, that's partnered with our gym. And that's where we kind of partner fitness with mental health.
Well, thank you so much. go grab Heidi's book, Buying Time, and, thanks, Heidi, and thanks you all for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Fail Your Way to Success. Now, if there's anything I love more than a failure to success story, it's a review. So I hope you'll think about leaving one. For more information about the show, go to failyourway.com. And for more information about publishing a book about how you failed your way to success, or just to find out more about what I do, go to legacylaunchpadpub.com.